I'm Emily.
And I'm Hannah.
We are best friends and dietitians. We have a goal of challenging nutrition misinformation and fitness trends with an evidence-based approach.
Each episode, we will dish up our thoughts about the latest facts on a popular health-related topic.
We're the Upbeat Dietitians. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Upbeat Dietitians podcast.
Hello, friends. Welcome back. Today, we are giving you the skinny on cheat days. We're going to be talking all about them, what they are, and we don't have a lot of good things to say about them. It's going to be mostly the problems with them. We have quite a few things that we see to be problematic about them. And we are hoping this video will hit home because cheat days are very popular. I had cheat days back in my MyFitnessPal calorie counting, macro counting days. And when I was looking up like information for today's video, I got on TikTok and just typed in cheat days. And of course, you know, there's tons of videos. Many of them have like millions of views. Emily and I were just talking off air about how we used to watch them on YouTube, like a 10,000 calorie, like cheat days that like favorite influencers will post. So they're very popular. Celebrities like The Rock and Terry Crews, you know, the ultra fit people like them will post about their cheat days. And so that gives us the idea that they are something that is required in order to have, you know, hashtag body goals.
Yeah. It's going to be, well, I've been, Hannah, we've been doing some reflection. I think we can like end this episode with alternatives. We'll put a positive spin on it, on like what you can do if you feel that you need a little bit more balance in your life and whatnot. But we will be breaking down kind of what a cheat day is and from a anti-diet approach, why it might not be giving you as many benefits as we'd like. So let's kind of talk a little bit about why cheat days even seem like a good idea, because everyone always preaches balance and everything in moderation. It's just these very arbitrary things that no one really knows what it means, which can be good and bad. So from a cheat days perspective, it allows you this flexibility in kind of your dietary regimen where you're able to take a break from being quote unquote disciplined and allow yourself to eat some fun foods. But kind of what exactly do we think from a dietitian standpoint? And the big question is, do cheat days fit into an intuitive eating lifestyle? So let's start it off with what is a cheat day / what is even a cheat meal? Because that's something as well where someone might not even just have a cheat day, it might just be a cheat meal. And this is when essentially you can eat any indulgent foods that aren't typically part of your diet. And from a cheat day standpoint, it's a day with no rules where you can eat whatever you want, including those quote unquote bad foods that you're supposed to be avoiding. Right off the bat, first issue is perpetuating that good versus bad food mentality, that these are foods that we shouldn't be eating. But on this one day or this one meal, we can kind of indulge. So as we've been preaching, food does not have a moral value. We need to kind of step, it's just food. Every food has different types of benefits to it. And if we continue to have that mindset around food, where like, these are foods that we can only eat on this day, we start to view them a little bit more differently. And we also don't want to start to feel any like guilt after eating them, or it's like, it's okay, it's on my cheat day, I ate these foods, can really affect our relationship with food in the long run, which we want to avoid. We want to have a good relationship with food.
Yeah. I feel like we've talked about good food, bad food mentality a million times on here, but that is, I think, one of the glaringly obvious things about cheat days is it's like good foods on not cheat days, bad foods on cheat days. And it's just like, it's not that easy to define a food as good or bad. Like your bad food may not be the same as my, not that I have bad foods, I'm a intuitive eating dietitian, but someone else's bad foods.
Yeah.
So it's just not a good way to label food, because like Emily said, there is so much more than just even nutrition when it comes to our food choices.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that cheat days are essentially just planned binges. And we all know that binge eating is not a great thing. So like, why would we want to encourage that and like have that be something we like look forward to? I've heard arguments from people saying that, like, going back to what Emily said earlier about how binges can be seen as a good thing because they can promote flexibility or allow for flexibility. So some people will say that having these binge or these binges, these cheat days, AKA binges, these it's cheat days,
binge in disguise.
Yeah, exactly. With a mustache on.
Yeah.
These cheat days may prevent binges because it does allow them to have, again, said quote unquote flexibility. They know coming up, they're going to have a day when they can eat whatever they want. So, you know, they can just stay disciplined for these last couple of days. When they get to Saturday, they'll be able to finally eat whatever. And yeah, this might work for a little while, you know, a few weeks, even a few months of this kind of cycle, but over time, it's going to get really hard to go from that cheat day back to your, again, quote unquote, discipline and get, again, heavy air quotes, quote unquote, back on track when those binges become something you look forward to so much. And the other days are days that you just like dread. I think we need to find the balance, which we'll give some tips on, you know, what to do instead, like we said. But again, this isn't going to work long term because it's going to get you stuck in that diet cycle of like restrict, binge, restrict, binge, restrict, binge. And over time, you know, that can lead to a lot of problems like weight cycling and increased food preoccupation. We always talk about how dieting is like the number one predictor of weight gain. And if you are doing, having cheat days, that is a diet. So all those things we discussed in the previous episodes about diets not being good, cheat days kind of falls into all of that.
Yeah. And also, the idea of a cheat day seems to kind of give that illusion of flexibility, but what happens if your friends want to go out for dinner on a day that is not a cheat day, or you have family come in, or you have a date? We talk about all these things. Like, we never talk about the dating aspect of food.
I know, we are so touched. We're so out of reality with that one.
We do not know what's going on.
Relationships. Yeah, we have no idea how to date people.
But I actually realized this talking to like some of my patients because I just don't think about it because I'm out of touch. Where they're like, yeah. And they'll ask me about like alcohol, like what the best alcohol to drink is, because they're like, I want to drink on my date. And I'm like, oh, people go out for drinks on dates.
What? Not but just like brunch with the girlfriends? What?
Yeah. But it's a planned binge. So like, there's still structure to it. It's not really that flexible, but like life happens, things happen. What happens if you aren't able to go to the grocery store that week? Or what happens if you're coming back from vacation and you aren't able to get your normal supplies and you have to rely more on those like convenience items that are very beneficial and giving you kind of some food? It's not as flexible as it seems. And also it makes life really hard to live when you have like maybe one cheat day a week. I don't even know how often people do cheat days. I was never in that realm because I was never even on the disciplined quote unquote track. So very like not sure what was going on there, but it makes it really hard to live and not fun, because there is a way to include all foods in your everyday life. And
exactly. Like, what if you just like spread your cheat day foods out through every day of the week and like strategically included them regularly?
Yeah.
I think that's a lot more of a balanced approach.
You'd probably not overeat them.
Exactly.
You probably might feel a little bit better if your body's going from the sudden change from like a disciplined day to a cheat day. It's a vicious cycle, and it's a very polarizing way to think. And as we all know here, as we're all Tud Buds, nutrition is not as black and white as we want it to be. So typically, if there's something as polarizing of a thought, it's not always correct or good to follow.
Yeah. Let's go on to our next problems, because we have more. Our next issue with cheat days is that it takes away from really big piece of intuitive eating, which is honoring your hunger and feeling your fullness. which just goes with dieting in general, you know, for on a diet, which you are for the other days of the week that you're not doing the cheat day, you likely are going to be possibly ignoring some hunger. And then when you get to your cheat day, you're likely going to eat past fullness. You're not really staying in that middle ground there. And the cheat days, like I said, often lead to you overeating because you have permission to do so on these days.
Yeah. It's exciting to like be able to eat whatever you want, which it doesn't need to be that restrictive, but people will so many times just push past because you're just so excited to eat like fun foods. And then you tend to, and you're like, oh no, I'm going to have to wait a week until I can eat this food again. So I'm going to overeat it now because I'm allowed to experience it today. I would never do a 10,000 calorie cheat day because I just know I would probably vomit. I would love to interview a YouTuber that did one and be like, yo, we can keep this on the download, but we're going to post it on the podcast. How did you feel? Like,
right.
You couldn't right. have felt good, especially if your body's not used to that many, like no one's eating that much regularly unless you are like Michael Phelps.
Right.
Michael Phelps isn't even doing that anymore because he is retired, but he was literally like a world renowned Olympian. So going from probably in restriction or whatever, or even whatever phase people are in their discipline diet, 10,000 calories is going to feel really different on your body.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not going to feel good. It's going to feel forced. And like, even though you have permission, like, why would you want permission to do that? It's going to be terrible. You're going to have a terrible time.
Yeah.
And you just can't even enjoy it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And to play like devil's advocate for people who are being like, Emily, Hannah, people's cheat days don't consist of 10,000 calories. That's just the clickbait. I'm like, yes, that is the clickbait. I will agree with you on that. But it still drives overconsumption, like large overconsumption of food that your body's just not used to. Like your body doesn't like change. That's an overarching theme with everything going on, from like weight changes to food consumption to the types of foods we're consuming. It wants to stay the same, and if we throw it off, it's gonna take some time to recover and feel okay, or wherever okay, feel okay for whatever you have going on then.
Yeah so. Period.
So our last problem, so we kind of touched on this, but there is that strong push for being disciplined, quote unquote, and having willpower, quote unquote, for those other 6 days of the week. You have to stick to whatever plan it is. The grind is there. I think where we were talking, I was talking to someone recently who said they don't like the word grind.
Well, it was probably me. It was
definitely you. I haven't really talked to many people recently, so it was probably you.
It was probably me.
But it really emphasizes like the grind never stops. So you have to push through, you have to be disciplined. And then you just go absolutely wild and bonkers on your cheat day. It's just like, I'm thinking of weird things right now. I'm like, I was thinking it's like Mickey Mouse Playhouse. That's
what? We can delete this. If you don't want to tell everyone you have COVID, we can delete this. But like, Emily has COVID, so that's why her brain is like,
it's okay, they can know.
What is happening?
I've been absent from the internet for like 2 weeks. So
people know. You're relying on like old core memories from childhood for your analogy.
I have no short-term memory, right? I have not absorbed any information recently. Gosh. I have to go really far back. But yeah, it's just a wild, maybe Funhouse. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Like, like, you know, the Carnival Funhouse, that's what your cheat day. It's just crazy. Because you're being so strict with yourself on those other 6 days, where it doesn't need to be that way. It does not need to be that way. If you need to hear this, you don't need to do cheat days or cheat meals. You don't need that. You don't have to label it as that. You can allow all foods. And for all those other people that say, well, you're telling me to eat donuts for every meal. No, we are not. No, you wouldn't. You would not feel good.
You we get to. You have permission to do that, but you would feel like actual trash.
Yeah. Which I assume you want to feel semi-okay in life, but like that is an assumption that I will not make because, you know, life is hard.
So. That's true. If you want to feel crummy, I guess that's your choice to do so.
Yeah. You can do whatever you want.
Well, I guess it's a good segue into what we think you should do instead. So
yes,
speaking to the willpower point, in intuitive eating, like willpower isn't a thing. Like there doesn't need to be willpower when it comes to eating because willpower creates the like assumption that you're doing something that is terrible, that you have to like push through and have, you know, this motivation to do it. But like eating should be a joyful experience. You don't need willpower and consistency is going to get you a lot further. So honoring that hunger, feeling that fullness, including these desserts, if that's your quote unquote bad food on a regular basis, that way you don't overeat them. That's going to get you a lot further than willpower is because willpower comes and goes. You've likely never felt motivated for longer than a couple of days on anything.
Yeah. And it's like Hannah said, food is supposed to be fun. Like eating is not, yes, food is fuel, but also it's so much more than that. It's social events, it's bonding, it's enjoying. Like you have to eat. That is like, you have to eat. It's, you don't get away around this. So may as well have a good time. Well, there are so little things we can control in this world. Food is kind of one of them. We have some control of what we eat. I say that lightly, but allowing yourself to eat a piece of chocolate every day is not only going to take that food off of the pedestal you have in your head, but you're not going to overeat as much. You're able to enjoy that fun food every day. Whereas like maybe you hold off and then you end up eating like an entire Portillo's chocolate cake on your cheat day.
That sounds so good.
I love Portillo's chocolate cake. That's so good.
And like, you're not a bad person if you eat chocolate and you're not a good person if you just eat broccoli. So like, you're not being bad if you do have that chocolate cake or whatever else.
Yeah. Know how we're on this floating rock? Yeah, we have much bigger issues going on than you eating chocolate every day or chips or whatever it is you enjoy eating.
Right. I know people are going to hate this. The gym bros are going to come get me, but like, don't take it so seriously. Like,
life is not that serious.
Like, you could have goals, have your goals, whatever. But like, yeah. I'm at the age and time in my life now where I'm like, it's not that serious.
No.
I'm not going to be stressing about some chocolate cake. That's going to add joy to my life, actually, not stress.
Yeah, it's going to make me a little bit happier.
Yeah. Well, another, I would say, like, general tip of what to do, going back to the consistency piece, we always talk about, like, what a balanced meal looks like, trying to get protein at every meal. So I'd say that's a big one, too. We will need to do, like, a full episode on balanced blood sugars, balanced plates. We always touch on it, but we should definitely do a full out episode. But like you guys know, if you are a longtime listener, we always talk about trying to get protein at every meal. Be sure to have some carbs in there. Something I always say is we don't want to eat our carbs naked, which means you have any kind of carb-rich food like fruit or starch or like sweets, that kind of thing. We always want to have some kind of protein, especially with it, because that will help to balance blood sugars. You'll feel fuller for longer, things like that. Because you'll just feel better. Like if you just had on your cheat day a dozen donuts, yeah, you'll get some protein there, but it's going to be mostly carbs, a bunch of naked carbs. You're going to just feel terrible from that blood sugar roller coaster you're going to be experiencing.
Yeah. I think the blood sugar episode will be really beneficial, honestly. Blood sugar is like all, it's kind of like its own little trend right now.
Sometimes in a not good way with like,
yeah.
Have you seen the blood sugar king or whatever his name is?
No.
With the stupid monitor. Kings? Because we won't get into that. That's
I have a lot of opinion.
We won't get into that.
Yeah.
The apparently guy who has like the king monitor. Or
doctor.
Dr. Yeah, King.
I know like Danielle talked about in our diabetes.
Oh yeah.
Episode where like, if you aren't like diabetic, you don't need a continuous blood glucose monitor because one, they're hard to get.
Exactly.
To sum it up, they're hard to get like a hold up. There's a shortage. Diabetics have enough to go through with how much they pay for insulin to keep them alive. But I know that like blood sugar stability is very important. Like we know this. I don't have to tell you this, but like you know this. But I feel like it's almost being pushed a little bit too much where it's like there's like a fear around it now.
Yes.
Where I'm like, there are cues. Like your body sends you cues when your blood sugar is too high or too low.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely do an episode on that. And if you want to learn more about stabilizing blood sugars, you should join the waitlist for our course coming out because we have an entire section on that. So if you want to learn a little bit more hands-on, be sure to check it out on our website. We don't talk about our course enough. Please tell your friends. We're really bad at marketing.
It's going to be amazing. It's like literally everything. It's like all the intuitive eating principles. It's like actual practical, like grocery shopping, meal planning, balanced blood sugar tips. It's like
everything. Literally everything we have in our brain. And you can then have access to our brain. And then that's
and it's like both of our brains too. So like we both are making all the slides together. So like things that I don't think about or don't say usually Emily's going to say or put in the slides. Mm-hmm. It's like both of our giant brains in one giant course. Giant.
So yeah, we'll link the course waitlist in the episode description. But well, I don't even know how many tips we've given.
I don't know.
As an alternative. But like, we hope you have there's probably a lot. We like talked about like consistency. We talked about blood sugar stability, like still practicing like gentle nutrition, like building well-balanced meals so you don't feel those crashes as much.
Including whatever you would classify as cheat foods into your regular day if you want to have them.
Yeah.
So you don't have to binge.
If you don't.
Exactly.
You don't want to. You don't have to.
I know. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah. So yeah, final thoughts with cheat days and cheat meals. So if you have to cheat on your diet, is probably not a diet you should be doing. And it's probably also not going to be sustainable. Cheat days also really perpetuate an unhealthy relationship with food, which we are not a fan of. That's kind of like one of our biggest passions in life, I guess.
I also hate the word passion. Passion and grind make me want to like.
You don't like the word passion?
No, it gives me grind vibes. But I don't know what else to use. When people say
I'm like passionate about.
I know. I think it can be used well, and like I obviously have passions of my own. I'm very passionate about a lot of things, but I just like the word passion gets overused. I actually remember like in college at Purdue.
Oh yeah.
You were in that class. Of course you were. We had like all our classes together. They always said like, don't use the word passionate in like cover letters or interviews because it's so overused.
As I use passionate all the time in interviews. Well, not in the applications.
Yeah.
Because I have the source on my side then.
Yeah. Anyway, that doesn't matter. I just have a lot of thoughts around passionate grinds.
I'll think of another word. Hold on.
Passionate grind would be a good band name.
It would be. I don't know what their vibe would be.
Like an R&B, like 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring back 2000s music.
It's a song that, oh, gosh, what's her name? Mary J. Blige would write.
Oh, yeah.
Passionate grind. Okay. Anyway. Yes.
Well, anyway, we're just really excited. We get really excited talking about your relationship with food, and we want to help you have a better relationship with food. And the biggest thing is cheat days often lead to that restrict and binge cycle because they are binges and discards.
We've got a little something up our sleeve for our bonus question today.
Yeah,
we had an old guest pop back on so graciously because if you remember back in the collagen episode, what episode number was that? Hold please. 63.
Oh, there we go.
So episode 63, we talked about collagen for about half the episode. And the other half of the episode we talked about is fish meat and various other controversial questions. So our friend Emily, who we had back on in the day, who was a veterinarian, She listened to the episode, had a lot of thoughts about what we had to say, and she so graciously provided us with answers to our burning questions in that bonus question.
Yeah, so we are excited to share this with you. We learned a lot. If you had a lot of concerns about what we had to say, very valid. We do know where we are new individuals now with a better sense of farm animal life in food science. So enjoy.
Enjoy.
So Emily, you listened to our collagen episode and your, I will allow you to share how you felt about our answers to the questions, but we wanted to bring an expert on. So I feel like we should start off with where the bonus question started is fish meat? I feel like we should just start off there because that's where kind of from there on out we kind of spiraled, but let's
that's valid start
the source.
So, I honestly feel like that part was mostly fine. It just kind of went off the rails after that.
It went on for like 20 minutes.
Because I agreed, I think, with where you guys ended up. Because yes, I agree that a lot of people don't consider fish to be meat. Because exactly what you said, like people saying they are a vegetarian, but then they eat meat and like pescatarians and all of that. But like at the heart of it, like fish is meat. Meat is muscle. Meat is myofiber. So like any living animal that has muscle and you eat that, that is meat. So fish is meat, but as a culture, we sometimes just decided that it isn't. And I honestly couldn't tell you why that happened, but yeah, it definitely is. It definitely gives you protein and it definitely is meat at the heart of it. But then okay. You started asking.
Okay, yes. Please segue. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, you asked if eggs are meat. I don't 100% know where you guys ended up with that, but eggs aren't meat.
I had asked, and then Emily like went on this other topic about whatever else. And I was like, no, that's Emily, I asked you a question. Are eggs meat?
I think we said eggs were meat because of like the food categories.
Because it's not dairy. That was our yeah. It's either dairy or it's meat. That's it.
Yeah. So other categories exist. So dairy is any product that either is milk or is derived from milk. So eggs are not milk and eggs are not derived from milk. So eggs are not dairy. Though I agree again that like a lot of grocery stores put it as dairy. And again, that's just like a cultural thing, I think, because like you could call it an animal product, but that just doesn't sound as good. But yeah, not dairy. They're also not meat though, because see, again, meat is animal muscle. Technically, okay, like even our muscle, like my arm is meat technically. Right. I wouldn't eat it though. But so eggs are not meat either. Eggs are protein. You could call them an animal product, but you would be wrong to call it meat and you'd be wrong to call it dairy. And I did want to just clarify one thing because I think Hannah, it was you at one point you started asking about like pro-life chickens and like, but like,
yes.
Do you realize that like the eggs that we eat are not fertilized?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to like that.
Absolutely.
Egg
will never
become a chicken. It couldn't become a chicken if it wanted to.
I'm very glad you clarified, but yes, 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 yes. Yeah. Thankfully, okay. I did have that knowledge somewhere in my brain. Yes.
So no one thinks that like we're eating because I feel like that's the whole, like, I understand if people don't want to eat eggs because they don't want to eat any animal products at all, but like eating an egg isn't murdering anyone. That egg will never be alive. It will never turn into anything. It will just rot away. So.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We tried to steer clear from going too much into like a.
Yeah. No, we don't have to like
a debate on that one, eggs, but yes. But
I just want to say like they aren't fertilized, the ones that we eat.
I'm trying to think of like, you mentioned like they'd be an animal product. I totally agree on. I'm trying to think like what other animal products we eat that aren't meat, dairy, or eggs. I think that's really it, at least in our
honey
general culture. Oh, honey is a good one.
And then there's animal products that we don't eat. So right. Like wool and like fiber, things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, most animal, I think the issue is like most animal products are dairy because most animal products are milk-based. So it's like milk, butter, which comes from milk, cheese, which comes from milk, yogurt, which comes from milk, like everything is milk. So I feel like rather than call it animal products, just so you can include eggs, they just call it dairy, even though it's not.
Okay.
That's my assumption. I don't own a grocery store, but.
It makes a lot of sense for a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
Should we get into the really heavy hitter? Do chickens have hooves?
We need to talk about
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> So I know that like one blog said that they have hooves, but they don't have hooves. Okay. So like a hoof is just like the horny covering of the third digit of a foot, and it's made of keratin, and technically, and this is kind of depending on who you ask, like I'm sure you'll find farmers who say that their chickens have hooves or talons or whatever, but like technically a chicken has feet, and then those feet have nails, and because it's like a wild animal, you could call them claws if you wanted to. You couldn't call them talons because they have to be a bird of prey to have talons, like a bird or a predator bird. I'm sorry, I think chickens I said that back. I don't know. They have to be a predator, and chickens are omnivores, but they don't like eat other birds. They only eat insects. So like, I wouldn't call it talons. If someone did, I wouldn't fight them about it, but they're not hooves.
So I could not call my toenails hooves or talons based on those descriptors. Okay.
No. You if you really wanted to call them claws, you probably could, because it's not really like a well-defined term. Like usually like a claw is basically just a nail, but on like a feral animal. So
you know me. Okay, yeah, this is so good.
You don't have hooves.
I don't have hooves. Okay, I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
What about the only thing I want to ask about is the lamb versus sheep?
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, so first, okay, a goat is a different animal than a sheep. Like, I just want to make sure we know that.
Our heads were all over the place.
I think we know that.
Like two different barnyard animals, and we eat both of them. I mean, I've only ever eaten goat in the context of Mediterranean food and Indian food. So like, if you don't eat those things, maybe you've never had goat. It basically just takes like sheep, honestly, or lamb. But usually it's like so heavily spiced that I don't even know what I'm like, what protein I'm eating anyway. So, but yeah, goat exists. We drink their milk and we eat their meat. And then sheep. Okay, so please tell me that you know that a lamb is just a baby sheep.
Okay, I think right? That's what we thought, but then we were like really like
you were just
questioning everything.
We had dairy and eggs and fish on the brain too. It was just a lot.
Okay.
So a lamb is a baby sheep. A lamb, like there's no difference. It's just, you know, like we call a baby is just a baby human. Like there you go. Technically when you're talking about eating them, if you are like served meat and that meat is lamb, that comes from a sheep that is less than a year old. And the difference is as sheep age, like any sheep younger than a year, the meat's really tender. Kind of like, you know, do you know what veal is? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So lamb is veal. Like, I mean, it's the equivalent. It's a young sheep. And then if they're older than 2 years, it's mutton, which you've maybe heard of like from Renaissance fairs mm-hmm. or like medieval set shows, like mutton. And it's just much tougher and much chewier and like generally not very good. It's not really common to find mutton, like because normally people don't want to buy that. They just want to eat lamb. And then technically, if you have a lamb or like a sheep that is between 1 and 2 years old, it's called hogget. But like, not a lot of people outside of food scientists use that term, I don't think. Usually people just call that mutton too. But it's like kind of better than mutton, but worse than lamb. But yeah, no, like the naming convention, that just purely like we have names for things to signify that like this is a young animal and the meat is tender and moist, just like veal for cows.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, and you mentioned like goat's milk. People drink goat's milk. Oh yeah. Okay. What you were saying about like dairy being specific to cows, like I get what you're saying, but like goat's milk is definitely dairy.
Okay.
Like any milk is dairy. But I understand that like normally if I was like, I'm gonna go to the dairy section, I probably wouldn't buy goat's milk. But I think that's also like a cultural thing, because if you were in India, I think they drink a lot more goat's milk than us because cows are sacred. But I don't know that for sure. Like I'm just sort of reaching. I know about meat, not about cultural dairy habits.
That makes sense.
Okay. I feel like there's definitely at least one other thing. I like wrote notes down about the questions you guys were talking about.
I love that.
Oh, yes. Okay. So you got really hung up on like what type of meat is pork.
Oh yes. Is it red meat or not? Oh, yeah. Or is it like poultry, like its own category? Yes.
Yeah. Because I mean, I think you just confused yourselves, because like pork is the category, you know, like,
oh my gosh.
Like, that's the cat. That's like saying
pork,
like what
poultry. Yes. Okay.
I kind of like, if you're trying to place it in red versus white meat, like I get that. But as far as like, what type of meat is it? Like pork is pork. Like pork is, that is the name for the type of meat that comes from swine. But yeah, red meat versus white meat is actually like a very hard question to answer. So that's valid that it's confusing, because it really depends on who you ask. Because technically, so the reason why some meat we clearly are like, this is red meat, is because it physically is red. Like meat, beef is red compared to poultry, which is white, just in appearance. And the reason for why that is because a meat from a cow has more myoglobin in it, which is a certain type of protein that contains heme, which is another protein, and it contains more iron. And the heme and the iron give it a red color. But then it gets really complicated, because like with a cow, it's really obvious, like there's so much myoglobin in there that it physically looks red. And in poultry, they have so little myoglobin that it physically looks white. But with pork, there's more myoglobin than chicken, but like, where is the cutoff and what is the barrier? And for a long time, pork was classified as red meat. And then because of, have you guys heard the studies where it's talking about how like red meat is worse for you than white meat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Which that is also like very controversial. That depends on who you ask, but in general, like there were all of these studies that were like, oh my God, red meat's bad for you. Don't eat red meat. So then all the pork producers were like, oh heck, no one's going to buy our pork. So then there was a massive marketing campaign where they were like, it's pork, the other white meat.
I was going to say, I've heard that. Yes. And
literally that's just marketing. Like
the drama.
Cause I mean, cause pork does have more myoglobin than poultry. But does it matter? Probably not. So does it really matter what they market it as? No. Like at the end of the day, there's benefits to eating pork and downsides to eating pork, just the same way as any meat. And nobody really knows if it's good or bad. But yeah, it really depends on who you ask. I'm not sure if there's actually an official statement from the USDA, but I was always taught in my like food science classes that red meat is any mammal, which would include pork and would include beef, deer, goat, lamb, like every mammal. And then white meat is non-mammals, which would be poultry and seafood for the most part. That like covers almost everything, but like it really does depend on who you ask, so that one's up for debate.
That's so interesting. Also, you just like re-triggered so much of my food science knowledge with the myoglobin and heme, and I was like, I forgot this information was in there. Uh-huh. Now I've never had to use it.
I'm like picturing my food science workbook right now. It's like, yeah, that's all I can see in my head.
I'm imagining the like diagram of like the pig.
Yeah.
It's like the different types, the areas.
What was his name? Dr. Saviano. Is that who we had? Doesn't matter. Anyway.
It definitely starts with an S, but yeah.
Yeah.
I got him and someone else, the two S old professors.
Yeah.
I love the pork drama. That is so
the other white meat.
There's a lot of drama. There's drama about bacon. Basically, it's a lot of just one study will come out, and then the industry doesn't want their entire food to just be discarded. So they're like, how can we spin this? And it's hard to know what really is valid or isn't valid, because a lot of the studies, especially with red versus white meat, a lot of the studies find that like people who eat more red meat are less healthy, but they can't really prove, is it because they ate the red meat or is it because
something else,
they weren't healthy to begin with? Because the people who aren't eating red meat, some like half of them are vegetarians, so like it's entirely different lifestyles to begin with, so the data's kind of garbage anyways. Mm-hmm. So I don't have an answer for that.
That applies to like most of the world of nutrition.
Yeah, fair.
What's actually real? We don't know.
Yeah. I like the mammal and non-mammal explanation though.
That helps.
Yeah. And I mean, again, at the end of the day, it's just a label. It just is true that since the categories are subjective, if you think about it, fish are very white and chickens are very white. Both of them have less iron than everything else. So it kind of works out.
It's a good way to put it. It's all just a label. So I don't know why we even have these bonus questions. We just like fighting about stuff, I think.
No, it was a good question. I mean, like I said, I would definitely argue fish or meat, but I also completely understand why like people just don't think of it as meat for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Emily. It's so good to have our residential veterinarian to answer these world-turning questions for us.
Yeah, say any other burning livestock questions.
Well, did you hear me say in the bonus question? I was like, I don't even know anything about farm animals, it seems like. I'm just embarrassing myself right now.
I mean, yeah, I guess if you've never really had to know things about livestock, I can't blame you.
Yeah.
But
If we ever have any other questions similar to this and you hear them and you are jarred by what we say, please text us and we can get you back on to answer.
Fantastic.
Okay. Cool.
All right, Emily. Well, thank you so much for this bonus question. We really appreciate it.
Definitely.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm sure you learned answer to the question, do chickens have hooves? That was my most burning question from that bonus question. That was actually our fish meat.
Yeah. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please go check out the course. We're linking it. You can check it out at theuppydietitians.com. Join the wait list. We are so excited to share this with you this fall. I don't even know when this episode's coming out.
September.
Okay, perfect. It'll probably not be out. Still, it'll be out or you can join the waitlist. But anyway, there'll be information on the website. So definitely go check that out. And we will chat with you guys next week.
Peace out. Go enjoy regular food every day.
Peace out, Girl Scout. That's what the kids are saying now.
I think the kids said that back in 2004.
They're bringing it back.
Oh, okay.
I've seen it come up a lot more. So
oh, really?
I'm trying to keep myself up to date with what the youths are saying.
We are really living in the 90s these days. I was looking at jeans online and like skinny jeans are not in.
No. I'm kind of glad.
Me too.
Because like, Those were hard to get your calves around.
Yeah, you're telling me. I got monster calves. Also, I saw a lot of low rise on the market.
I do not want to go back to low rise.
I'm not doing that.
No. Maybe mid rise, but high rise till I die.
Like up to my belly button or higher at least.
Up to my sternum, please.
Oh my gosh. If there's not a bony structure there, don't even think about it. How do we always do this? Okay, episode over. We're done.
All right.
See you guys.
Have a good rest of your day, guys.
Thank you so much for tuning in on this episode of The Upbeat Dietitians with your hosts, Emily Krause and Hannah Thompson.
We appreciate you all so much for continuing to support us. In order to support us and sustain the success of this podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review.
If you'd like to provide us feedback for future episodes and guest stars, follow us on Instagram at The Upbeat Dietitians.
Lastly, you can show us support by providing a monthly donation using the link at the end of our bio.
Once again, thank you so much for listening today, and stay tuned next Wednesday for a new episode. Until then, we hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.